谢谢您的大当子，还今年的年龄都这个，退休那里啊，那个就老年代对了，那个就学会那样，你这个这些那里啊，那这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个 Good evening, everyone. So last week we continued with our with the presentation on patience, and we mentioned how that patience, how to incorporate patience within our daily practice. So in the morning we go through our meditation as we describe every week, and then when we come to the practices of a bodhisattva, we then make the commitment that today I will practice patience, with the meaning being that no matter what problems I encounter and difficulties I encounter today, I will keep my mind calm and spacious and respond skillfully. And this is because now in my morning practice I've generated this intention to lead all beings to a state free from suffering, a state of supreme happiness. And so having made this intention, it would be completely strange if I were to get angry with a being or frustrated with a sentient being after having made this commitment today to be of benefit to others. So with this understanding, we make the commitment that no matter how others treat me, how others speak to me, or whatever problems and difficulties I have in my life, I'm going to practice patience, meaning I will keep my mind calm and spacious and skillfully deal with these situations. So in this way, I will take on all the problems and difficulties that others project towards me or that I have in my own life. And I'll take this on behalf of others, others who do not have the skill or the knowledge or the training to be able to deal well or effectively with their problems. I will take it on and I will be and I will act as their representative. So that's what we've been looking at the last couple of weeks in the practice on patience. So we're going to start tonight on page 242 with the four goals of the Kadampas. So we'll look at that and what these are and what the meaning of these four goals or four aims are. And thereafter, the text presents a number of stories about how holy beings from the past practice patience. As you see on page 242, base your mind on the Dharma, that's the first. Base your Dharma on a humble life, the second. Base your humble life on the thought of death. And fourthly, base your death on an empty, desolate valley. Look at the first one, base your mind on the Dharma. So here, a Dharma practitioner should have strong faith in the teachings of the Buddha Dharma as well as the three jewels. So a Dharma practitioner should have faith in the practices of love and compassion as well as wisdom, and then faith in the three jewels.
So here the practitioner
should have a mind that is the faith that the practitioner should have should be stable. So the kind of faith that one should cultivate is a faith that is not that of a fair-weather friend. but rather no matter what one goes through, no matter what problems one encounters, one's faith remains stable. So it's the analogy that's often presented is if someone's their life is threatened, and one is told, if you don't give up your faith in the three jewels, you will die, then even in such a perilous situation, deep within one's heart, one should still retain one's faith. So the meaning is that no matter what difficulties or problems one encounters, one should keep one's faith in the three jewels. In an unlikely event that one's life is ever threatened and someone says, if you don't renounce your faith in the three jewels, then I will kill you. Then, of course, what comes from your mouth isn't so important. Then one says, oh, I don't accept the three jewels. One wants to protect this precious life. But in one's mind, no matter what problems one encounters, one's faith should remain stable. Furthermore, the meaning here is that when one encounters problems and difficulties, one's faith should remain unshakable. So this could be expressed in the following context. So someone who has either influence over you, such as one's employer, or maybe someone that you have a close relationship with, such as your parents or another loved one, if they are giving you a hard time, then when they're scolding you or they're speaking to you in an inappropriate manner or harshly, one's mind should stay calm and stable, and in fact, love and compassion should arise for this suffering being before you, this being who's speaking to you in this harsh, rough manner. One, it should arise within our mind that this being is now suffering, and therefore minds of love and compassion arise. So this would show a stable faith in the Dharma, in particular the practice of love and compassion.
Bangola, 망고질래 아니 착신이에요 착바요 맞다 다자라 망보다 되니기 가요 말어 내가 최고 짜라 뛰어라 당아도 최 건조스마 대바체 망 지금 상기래 대바 최래 대바 진에 내가도 최 년명군에 제이나 다 장고나 신지 뭐 심기 최 년내지 푸우데 장고나 우리래래 장고나 고래래도 갈라고 그랬으니 대중 초시에 고그래서 대중 초시야 그래서는 정보 della panguanza, and the Chimbo Mangachala Mango, Yedigan, Chiora, Dijora, Yashima Samdayo, Margor, Ninilia, Tweed, Tungenda, Dulokon, Jixam Chita, Sahajixam, and the Tigor Condola. O Dina, she, Sosugi, Mazu Chi, Sosugi, Tweed Tungin, Sosugi, and Tedigi, and Tedigi, and Tedigi, and Sid, and Zayatunga, and Dushu Chosha, Jesus, Dushu Chosha Majabana, Deva Chimbutin.
The second one, base your dharma on a humble life. So the word that we have here is humble, this literally means poverty. So what is the meaning of poverty in this context? So of course what is not being said is that one should live like a beggar, because this is really what the word is, to be like a beggar or to be impoverished. So that's not what is being said. So the meaning rather is that is not that we should be aspiring to become like someone who struggles to have enough just to sustain their body, or someone who struggles to eat nutritious food every day. Rather, the meaning here of what we have as humble, a humble life, is that we should become free of attachment. In particular, we need to develop a mind of contentment. So what this meaning is then, to bring it down even more so, to define it more clearly, base your dharma on a humble life. So a mind that is free of attachment for the desires of this life. A mind that is not obsessing over the desires of this life, such as food and clothing and the like. So it's not that one shouldn't have enough to eat or one shouldn't be properly dressed, but the mind should be free of clinging for these, and the mind should rather be content for what one has. So that is the meaning of a humble life in this context.
Rangi Dundala, and the Sayatu Dulo de Gila, Dishon Choshe. Sien le Pemper Duella, Sien le Pemper Duella, and Sien Gorda, and Chio Pia, the Dinigi Sienna, Sienki Dundala, Dishon Choshe, Yama, Daddy, Gaz and Dishon Choshe and Mayor, Sien Robert Tumar, Jena Diniz, Sienki Dundala, and Dishon Choshe Majaja, and Chigi Gazi, Chigi Dinigi Robert Tuya, Dinigi Chevena, and Mado, and the Dishon Choshe said, Rangi Dundala.
Another way that we could express humble life here is to be of a few desires. So base your dharma on having few desires. So the meaning of having few desires is of course relating to worldly pleasures. It doesn't relate to the objects of one's practice. So one shouldn't have a desire just to practice a little bit or to meditate for a few days and then, enough. So that's not the meaning of few desires. So when the object is being of benefit to others, then one should have great desire. But in terms of desire for worldly comforts, then one should be content with what one has, but rather place one's mental energy into being of benefit to others.
Jigi, 这个先来
meaning of humble life then has three parts to it. So the first part would be that in terms of one's own worldly desires, these one should strive to abandon and be content with what one has, and not to obsess about having always greater and better and newer. And then secondly, so in terms of being of benefit to others and helping others, then here to have great desire to be of benefit to others, to strive in one's practice so one can develop one's mental strength to help others even further, then this is of course in the right direction. And then the third meaning here is, so if we are helping others to have to fulfill their needs, but for example, in a worldly sense, so that if we're helping people who are impoverished, the way that we help them needs to be in accordance with, needs to be virtuous. We shouldn't cheat and deceive some so as to help others. We shouldn't harm some people so as to help others. We shouldn't, for example, take from those who we think have an abundance, and so that we can then give to those who don't, who are impoverished. We should ensure that we don't engage in wrong livelihood, but that we help others in a virtuous manner. So these are the three meanings of having a humble life. Looking at the third one, base your humble life on the thought of death. So here the meaning behind this is that when we are observing the suffering that others are experiencing, and we generate this wish to help them, and then we may well encounter an obstacle to help others may be difficult. We may have to go through difficult circumstances so as to help others. For example, if one's helping people who are impoverished, maybe they're living in squalor and their entire conditions, their surrounding conditions are quite desperate. And then we may look at this and think, oh, this is filthy. Maybe I will get a disease if I help them. And thinking like this, we may quite easily lose the wish to help others. So when there are problems in terms of being of benefit to others, we need to be patient with those and understand that being of benefit to others is particularly important. Dealing with these kinds of difficult obstacles, these are not beyond us. These are problems that we can transform. So we need to, so part of the meaning of this third one here, of this third goal, is that we need to be patient with hardships in order to benefit others. And we need to take on these problems for others. So we hear about the practice of taking on suffering of others. So here we have the opportunity to take on the suffering of others in the sense of be patient with or endure problems so as to benefit others. And in this way, we can practice taking on the suffering of others.
So furthermore, what
these goals are pointing out to us is also the practice of patience. So we need to be patient with the difficulties that we experience, firstly from others. And so we spoke about a lot about that 2 weeks ago. And here the understanding should be whatever problems we encounter from others, no matter how difficult others are towards us, we need to keep our mind calm and spacious and practice patience. And then secondly, that whatever problems I have in my own life, whatever difficulties I have in my own life, so not coming from others, but within either my own living conditions or in relation to my health, I need to be patient with whatever difficulties that I have. And here the meaning, of course, isn't accepting in the sense of just sitting back and saying, oh, life is tough, but rather saying, I need to keep my mind calm and spacious so that I can think clearly and continue to progress in a beneficial manner. And then thirdly, the third meaning here is that when we encounter problems in terms of our Dharma practice, there we need to also practice patience. Because if we practice patience, then our mind will not be perturbed. Our mind will stay focused and stay powerful. Because when practicing patience, we do experience problems. For example, our faith, our trust may be shaken. We may find, oh, our mind isn't progressing. The Dharma is not reliable. And a doubt like this may come. So we need to be patient with ourselves and understand that we are afflicted beings and doubts are going to arise. And these things happen, but our faith should remain stable and we should persevere through these doubts. And likewise, when trying to help others, be of benefit to others, we're going to experience problems. And that doesn't mean we should then say, oh, it's all too difficult, I give up. But you should be patient and accepting that problems are part of the samsaric experience. And therefore, we need to persevere through the problems and do this through transforming the problems. So these are the various practices of patience are included here. We have here then the three types of practice, three practices of patience included within these this verse here. So the first is probably the most common form of problems and difficulties that we experience, which is coming from other people. And it may come either directly from others, through others speaking abusively towards us or taking advantage of us. Or it may come from our way of thinking, oh, I don't think this person likes me, or they don't trust me, or they've got a bad view of me. But this is probably the most common source of our problems and difficulties, thinking about how others think of us, or how others directly talk to us, or directly behave towards us. So as we've looked at in some detail, these are opportunities to practice patience. And it's crucial that we train our mind so that we start to respond skillfully when these problems come. And they do come, and they will continue to come. So therefore, there's great benefit in training our mind in how to skillfully respond internally when faced with these difficulties. And that we looked at in some detail a couple of weeks ago. And then the third type, which is what we looked at a bit last week and are looking at this week, is the patience to do with our Dharma practice. We're all sitting here, and we're sitting here because we have an understanding of the need to practice Dharma. In other words, we have an understanding of the need to develop our way of thinking, develop our own minds. However, we do encounter so many obstacles and problems, and all too often those obstacles defeat us. So when we encounter obstacles in our Dharma practice, again, we need to be patient with these. So when we think of our conditions to practice Dharma, then it's very easy for the mind to complain. Oh, it's too hot today. I can't even concentrate on reading this book. Or there's too much noise outside. I can't meditate. And like this, our mind can easily create a long list of reasons why it is just too difficult. And here we need to understand that this is just the nature of our samsaric mind. It finds problems and it complains. And we need to practice patience, keep our mind spacious and calm, and persevere through these difficulties, and continue to practice, but in a skillful manner. And so that's the third of the three divisions of patience. And then the second one is what we looked at last week. So that is to deal with the problems not from others, but problems from within ourselves. So this could be our own way of thinking, or to do with illness. So when we encounter these problems, we need to, again, these problems that aren't directly related from others, but from our own side, we need to be skillful as well in how we deal with these. And we need to practice patience. In other words, we need to keep our mind calm and spacious despite the problems we have, the problems and difficulties and obstacles we have in our life. Because then, if our mind is spacious, we can utilize this as an opportunity to develop ourselves further. So, for example, when we experience illness, then often this can bring one down and bring one down into a very weak, despairing mental state. But rather, if we can recognize this illness as, whilst it of course is an unwanted situation, it too is an opportunity that can be utilized to develop our mind. So in the same way that ourselves as a patient, we don't want to be a patient, we don't want to be stricken by an illness, nor does any other being. And myself, like every other being, only wants to experience happiness and wants to be completely free from all problems and difficulties. And now that I'm experiencing this illness, I need to look at where this illness came. And whilst the law of causality is quite hidden, and one can't tell exactly what action led to this result, for sure, we ourselves in a past life accumulated the cause that has now ripened in this illness. So that cause I accumulated, and now I'm experiencing it. But by experiencing it, then that karmic seed is being exhausted. So that, to remind ourselves just of that, is something positive, that this negative karmic seed that we accumulated in a past life, that it has now ripened and it is exhausted. But that karmic seed that I created, so too have countless other sentient beings, and probably all sentient beings on their continuum have a seed from a similar action. And they, like me, do not want to experience the ripening results of that. Now I am experiencing it. It has ripened on me. So let me experience the ripening results of that negative action on behalf of all beings. By me experiencing the ripening result of my negative action, may no being ever have to experience this ripening result. And this way, we practice taking on this negative karma of all beings and transforming it within us. So in this way, we can take on the suffering of others and transform it within us. And this serves a particular purpose. Because normally when we have an unwanted circumstance, particularly a greatly unwanted circumstance, such as a severe illness, our mind is likely to become overwhelmed by this, become weakened by this. But if we imagine that we are experiencing this on behalf of all sentient beings, we can generate a very powerful mind, a very strong mind, a mind that thinks, I can utilize this unwanted situation, but in a very positive way. And like this, the mind will become powerful again. And with this powerful mind, we can generate a strong wish. May no being ever suffer like I am now. May no being ever experience this kind of difficulty. And furthermore, may all beings only experience their desired happiness and their longed for joy. And thinking like this, not only is our mind now more powerful, but our mind has the opportunity to become joyful, because we can imagine others experiencing happiness, others experiencing joy. And in this way, we give rise to minds such as love and compassion, and we accumulate a tremendous amount of merits. So that's a summary then of the three types of
patients.
This practice of equalizing, exchanging self and others, and taking and giving. So I've just presented this in terms of taking on illness. We can, of course, use this in any situation, and one doesn't need to be ill to do this practice. Anyone can do so. But then the next step in this practice, and a crucial step, is that recognizing that we have accumulated a tremendous amount of virtue due to these meritorious minds, we've recognized that we have been able to accumulate this merit independent on others. So both our teacher having taught us the technique as well as the suffering of others. Then this virtue that we have now accumulated, that we've accumulated independence on the kindness of others, we dedicate to them. We dedicate it so that this virtue that we, in through our own practice, have accumulated, we dedicate that these karmic seeds ripen on the continuum of others, and that others can experience the virtuous results of our own practice. So this is a very important part of the practice of taking and giving. It's quite common, though, in this practice of taking and giving, for two doubts to arise. So the first doubt would be, so if I'm sincerely generating the wish that may the suffering of others or the negative karma of others ripen upon me, my situation is going to get so much worse, and I don't want to have more problems and suffering in my life. But of course, yeah, don't worry, this isn't going to happen. Even if someone, for example, were willingly wanting to sell their suffering, let alone give it away, they couldn't do that. Likewise, we can't give ours away either, unfortunately. So don't worry, that is not going to happen. But then hearing that that is not going to happen, then one may also, the second doubt may come about and think, well then what's the point of this practice? If others are not going to be alleviated from their suffering, then what is the point of this practice? So these are very common doubts. So then what is the actual outcome of this practice of taking and giving? So maybe we can present two outcomes. So firstly, in terms of yourself as a practitioner, your mind such as love and compassion will arise. The strong wish of may others be free of suffering, and this wish being so strong that I will take that suffering from others and experience it myself. And all the virtue I have, I give to others because I want others to be happy and experience only happiness and joy. So the meditating in this way, then sincerely from the depths of one's heart, minds such as love and compassion arise, and these will arise very powerfully. And so from this, accompanying these powerful minds of compassion, there is a side effect that one's confidence, one's strength of mind, this grows. So one as a practitioner, as a being, becomes more powerful, one's minds become more powerful, one's confidence grows. So one's ability to engage positively in situations grows and strengthens. Then secondly, of course, through this powerful generation of love and compassion, one accumulates a lot of virtue. So accumulating a lot of virtue, then what does this mean? This means our future rebirths will go well, we won't end up being born in the lower realms, and moreover, not only will we attain good rebirths, but these powerful, virtuous minds that we are developing, strengthening, and in particular strengthening the habituation to, these will, in our future lives, will be there and they will be strong again, which means our spiritual growth will continue. And then in our next lives, we'll be starting from a higher point, so to speak, a higher point of mental development, and we will thereby be able to continue from this higher point with our spiritual progression. So what that means, then, due to ourselves having developed ourselves mentally further, we will be able to be of even greater benefit to others in our future lives than we are now, and we will continue our progression towards our spiritual goals. So in this way, through engaging in the practice of taking and giving, indirectly we do bring benefit to others as we progress spiritually. And directly, of course, we ourselves benefit through this practice.
Chuyện nhắm đến chế định cấp là xí đi cấp là, anh cô cả ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ、ちょ
And so we look, so the third of the four goals of the Kadampas, base your humble life on the thought of death, had quite a lot of meaning behind it, and that's what we've been looking at now with the various practices of patience. Then to come to the fourth of the four goals, base your death on an empty, maybe you can rather say desolate valley, rather than a barren hollow. So base your death on an empty, desolate valley. So the meaning here is that we need to, as we heard in the second of the goals, is we need to develop humility. In other words, develop a mind of contentment towards what we have and don't have in this life. So here, if one hasn't developed this mind of contentment, then at the time of death, there's going to be strong attachment towards our loved ones and towards our possessions. Whereas if one has practiced with humility, if one has developed a mind of contentment, then one won't have attachment for worldly possessions and relationships. Then, when the time of death comes, then one's mind will be relaxed and confident, because one will know that one has practiced well, and due to practicing well, then there is confidence that one's future life will turn out well. There's not a doubt that one's future lives will go well. So therefore there's no need to worry, because one is actually seeing this transition that we call death. It's not so different from moving from one home to another home, because one is just moving from one physical basis to another physical basis. So therefore, through having applied oneself well to spiritual practice, then at the time of death, one's mind isn't grasping towards worldly possessions and relationships, but rather the mind is relaxed and spacious and confident, and one can sees this process as nothing more than moving from one form to another.
Never
So we've now looked at these four goals, so just to present them in a summary form. The first one was about having stable and powerful faith in the Dhamma. The second was having a mind of contentment, a mind that is not attached to worldly possessions. And then thirdly was about the practice of patience with its three subdivisions. And then fourthly was at the time of death to have a stable faith in the three jewels, to have a mind that is content, that is not overcome by attachment, and to still be practicing patience. And then through having these three minds present, then at the time of death, one will die without attachment and will die with confidence.
With these
four practices, here it's important to be aware that having faith in the Dhamma alone isn't enough. If one has faith in the Dhamma but hasn't cultivated minds of the mind of contentment, one hasn't cultivated minds of patience, then that is not enough. Faith alone isn't enough. Because just having faith alone and thinking that one is going to progress spiritually and everything will go well is like, and the illustrations here of like trying to sew with a two-pointed needle, so where both ends of the needle are sharp. That, of course, is not going to go well. Or having a container that contains both fire and water. That, too, isn't possible. So merely having faith is not sufficient. One needs to practice. In other words, one needs to cultivate the minds of the Dhamma, not just have faith in the Dhamma as an external object, but actually have cultivated it within oneself. In particular, in this context, minds of contentment and patience. And the Buddha himself showed this as an example. So if you think of the life story of the Buddha developed faith in what would become the Buddha Dharma, and then he showed the example of turning away from the worldly life and turning his focus towards the Dharma. So he left the palace and went into the forest to meditate. So he was showing the example then of turning away from our obsession for worldly possessions and towards worldly relationships. And then he engaged in his practice with vigor, and he was in the forest for 6 years going through many hardships. And then he attained the final result, the result of enlightenment. So that process, that progression, is in accordance with what we have here in, with the four goals of the Kadampas. First, developing strong faith, then this mind of contentment, turning away from the obsession with worldly comforts and possessions, and then practicing with vigor, and in this way, attaining attaining our spiritual goals. The bottom of page 242 is the example of Jetsun Milarepa. And that too is similar to what we've heard. So Milarepa developed faith in the Buddha Dharma, and then the second step, he turned away from this mental obsession with worldly possessions and relationships. And we know from his life story he endured many hardships. So this then is the third part. He practiced, and he practiced patience enduring these hardships. In other words, all the hardships that he encountered, he didn't let those hardships overcome his wish to achieve his spiritual goals. And through this determination, he eventually attained his spiritual goals. So here, with both the example of Buddha Shakyamuni and now with Milarepa, we see first the cultivation of faith, then the turning away from worldly activities, and then persevering in our practice through all difficulties, practicing the various types of patience, and doing so until one attains our spiritual goals. There are other great practitioners of the past who also practice in this way. So the text mentions two Tibetan masters, Melong Dorje and Longchen Rabchan.
Further analogies or sayings presented from other Tibetan teachers. So here the meaning in brief is that even if one has developed the wish to practice, then this of course is a good thing, but guard your mind against being deceived by worldly desires. Because even if one has the wish to engage in committed practice, but one puts an overemphasis on collecting the ideal conditions, then by the time one finally accumulates these
these desired conditions, one's opportunity to practice may be lost. So therefore, rather than wasting the opportunity when one has done the preparation and is ready to engage in practice, then do so. And if one is practicing well, then all the help that you need will come your way. So don't obsess with getting all the perfect conditions, because this is just showing the lack of the mind of contentment, the lack of patience. Rather, when the wish to practice is there and the basis is developed, engage in practice.
Then at the bottom, page 243, starts some verses from Milarepa. No one to ask me if I am sick, no one to mourn me when I die. To die here alone in this hermitage is everything a yogi could wish for. So what Milarepa is saying here is that he is now focusing solely on the attainment of his spiritual goals. And if there aren't people to ask him, how are you today, how are things going, then what this means is that the objects of there are far fewer objects of attachment, in other words, these worldly relationships. So he's removed himself from all these worldly distractions and is rather solely and intensely focused on the attainment of his spiritual goals. And he now, in his practice, has reached the stage where that sincerely is all that he wants. Then at the top of page 244, no one to wonder where I've gone, no particular place to go, to die here alone in this hermitage is everything a yogi could wish for. My corpse can rot and be eaten by worms, my gristle and bone can be sucked dry by flies, to die here alone in this hermitage is everything a yogi could wish for. So again, it's similar to what, again, by the way, before read both verses, I just read the one. So it's similar to those two verses from before, where Milarepa is saying he's now removed himself from these objects of attachment, people who could distract him from the attainment of his final goal. So now he knows that he is engaging in accumulating tremendous virtue, and even if he dies before the attainment of his final goal, his future lives will be taken care of, his future lives will go well. So therefore, actually, wherever he dies, no matter what the conditions are around him, these aren't important. And so therefore, his mind is truly content with whatever he has, because he is focused solely on his spiritual practice.
Chelang is a misuse of us, 东西，东西，公庙对，对了，那嘴巴也不讲嘛，这个张那个嘴巴讲多过来，晓得吧？那东西人们吃了，都像都些干啥些的，刚好有没结巴吃的，新鲜那是一个的，真的。我他妈，刚刚有啥嘛的，那雷军队有啥嘛的，但是刚刚没呢，雷军队要么发育嘛，别啥子也生别个，今年新鲜那是一个的，就像今年个新鲜没用嘛，对了，嘴巴讲多过去过过来。
Remember from last week we said that there are different ways that the practice of patience is subdivided. So they all start with practicing patience from in terms of receiving harm from others. And usually the second subdivision is what we looked at last week, which is patience for one's own problems. But that division isn't presented in this text, but that is usually the second division. And then the third division is practicing patience in the context of our Dharma practice. And so that's usually the third division. And that third division is here in our text is broken up into the second and third. So the second division, which you've just looked at now, the patience to bear hardships with the Dharma, is usually included with what we have here in the third division, patience to face the profound truth without fear. So this part here now is specifically about practicing patience when one is meditating on emptiness. So why it's specifically mentioned that one should be patient when meditating on emptiness is because when one is investigating where the self is, it's very likely that fear will arise. When one's meditation progresses well and one is very likely to give rise to this fear of, do I not exist? Is there no such thing as the I at all? And then fear can arise. Now fear is an afflicted mind. So we need to practice patience with our afflictions. In other words, not allow ourselves to be overcome by the afflictions. So just like if someone else is angry towards us, we need to practice patience with our situation and not allow ourselves to be overcome by our own anger and respond, but rather keep our mind calm and spacious. So similarly here, if fear arises whilst meditating on anger, practice patience. Recognize the fear as an affliction and practice patience and persevere through this difficulty.
And then further down on page 244, there's an illustration from a teacher's life story that explains this. So he was teaching to some monks in India before he came to Tibet, and he was teaching them about selflessness of persons, and they were very receptive to that presentation. But then when a teacher started to teach them about that all phenomena are actually selfless, that they are empty of true existence, then they freaked out. They didn't accept that presentation at all. So they could accept the presentation that the self is selfless, the person is selfless,
but not that phenomena are. So then they developed a very negative mind. Then the teacher explained to them that if you want to attain the final spiritual goal, you have to analyze or investigate reality, and you need to do this correctly and thoroughly. Meaning, not just look at the selflessness of persons, but also the selflessness of phenomena. Meaning, or to put it another way, you need to investigate emptiness. And then in conjunction with this, you also need to meditate on love and compassion. You need to develop these minds within yourself as well. So you need to meditate on the wisdom side, meditate on emptiness itself, as well as develop love and compassion. And Atisha explaining this to them, seeing the severe obstacle to the accomplishment of the Dharma goals, he himself developed love for them. And then it ends with another story from the time of the Buddha, where when the Buddha was teaching profound emptiness, some monks who were particularly arrogant and proud about their understanding, they couldn't accept this presentation on emptiness, but thought it was completely perverse. And they developed very strong negative minds and reacted even physically by vomiting. And they died and ended up being born in the lower realms due to these strong negative minds. So hearing this final story here from the time of the Buddha, some doubts may well arise again, because we know that a Buddha is omniscient. And a Buddha knows all the different inclinations and aspirations of others. So if a Buddha is omniscient, why then did he teach something that would lead to the arrival of severe wrong minds in his audience and lead them to being born in hell? Is he either then not omniscient, or did he either, if he is then omniscient, then did he intentionally send these beings to hell? So it's quite possible that a doubt like that could arise. And furthermore, then one may think, The teacher we have here, he's not a Buddha, and now he's teaching us as the view on emptiness. So we also in this kind of danger. And yes, there's some truth to this, because, for example, if in the dark one throws a stone at an object, it's dark, you can't even see this object, so you don't know if you hit it or if you miss it, and you may hit it, but you'll probably miss. So I don't know your various minds and predispositions, so I just will teach emptiness. And whether you accept it or understand it, I really don't know. So you may well think, and what kind of outcome is going to come when emptiness is taught to us? So
the meaning here actually is that the Buddha is omniscient, of course, and through the Buddha's omniscience, he could see that these beings, these monks in the story, that they were, in all likelihood, were going to get lost in their practice, and the attainment of the goal of Buddhahood was something very, very distant for them. But even through them generating anger and being born in hell, but through attaining the imprint of hearing about emptiness from the Buddha, they would be reborn out of hell, and through those imprints and the other virtue that previously accumulated, they would quickly progress through the various paths and attain the state of Buddhahood themselves. So for those particular individuals, the situation was that they would actually progress much quicker to the state of enlightenment, despite taking this detour through the lower realms. However, in general, it's said that emptiness shouldn't be taught to those who don't have interest in the subject, because if they develop wrong views, and they are in danger of being born in the lower realms and remaining there. Whereas others who do have an interest in emptiness, even if there was a negative outcome, the combination of their imprints and their interest in the subject matter would lead them to quickly attaining the final results.
Yeah, 이내 니가 소야 개조 배 휴침을 살고 오라. 진짜 갈래들이 판도 휴침을 이미지 니갈래요나 안지윤이에 대하다 되니기 되니기 막고 용고로 와라. 니네 로숨 지금 삼디오 그래서 로숨 강배 나는 누구나 뒤진 사들 갈래 여러와다 니네다. 갈래 개원은 딜리 판도 체제 봐서 어디 니 되고래 사들 아미국 가나 용고로 와. 니네다 안디 판도 체에는 니용고 해제.
And similarly, so winding up here, this presentation on being patient with difficulties in our Dharma practice. So many of you will have engaged in a Nyingne practice, and you know in the Nyingne practice there are many difficulties. On the second day you have to be in silence. And not only that, you can't eat. And not only that, you also can't drink. So there are many difficulties. However, people persevere, and they will do a second, a third, and repeat, or regularly engage in the Nyingne practice, despite those difficulties. And that is because of the understanding of the benefit that comes from the practice. Similarly, those who enter into a great retreat, a three-year retreat, there are a lot of difficulties involved in going into retreat, a lot of obstacles and hardships, and a lot of temptation to give up. However, being aware of the potential benefit that will come from persevering through the difficulties, through being patient with the difficulties, then the yogi will continue in their retreat and continue to strive to attain their goal. Just to check now with the noise from the rain, you can hear me at the back, I guess? Yeah, okay, good. So now this brings us to the end of the presentation on patience that we've been looking at over the last few weeks. So we've looked at the three different divisions. So here, the most important thing in terms of combining this in our daily practice is that this practice of patience is something of supreme relevance for all of us. So in our daily practice, we generate the motivation to be of greatest benefit to others. And every week we speak about how to do this meditation, so this is clear for us. But then, as we progress in our meditation, we should remind ourselves that now that we've made this commitment to be of benefit to others, to become someone who always strives to help others and not to harm others, then therefore the practice of patience is crucial. And so in terms of being patient with my obstacles in my own Dharma practice, this is what I need to do. I need to overcome all these obstacles, and I need to do so with an open and spacious mind. Likewise, all the problems I receive from others, or the problems I have in my own life, I need to remain patient with these. And reminding ourselves the meaning of patience is that the mind stays undisturbed, and thereby the mind stays open and spacious, and we can apply antidotes, and we can keep our mind strong and powerful. Then in our morning practice, we remind ourselves that whomever I meet today,
Many of them, they maybe will give me an opportunity to practice patience. And when that opportunity is presented, I should generate this reminder, I should remind myself of the practice of patience and take this opportunity and keep my mind spacious and gentle no matter what they say to me or how they act towards me. And in this way, I take on the suffering of others and I transform it and I give them the virtue of my practice back to them. In other words, through practicing patience, taking on the suffering of others, I can respond skillfully, perhaps lovingly, kindly, wisely. And this way, I can, in a practical sense, engage in taking on the suffering of others and giving virtue to them, giving happiness to them. And furthermore, in our meditation, so that's relating to the first type of practice of patience, the suffering from others. And the second type, in terms of transforming our own problems and difficulties, then if one is experiencing illness or any kind of other problem in one's life, then one can utilize this in the way we mentioned at the beginning of the class and take this as an opportunity to engage in the practice of equalizing, exchanging self and others, and engaging in the practice of taking and giving. And in this way, we can make our mind powerful and strong, develop minds of love and compassion, develop our own inner confidence, knowing that we can overcome problems and difficulties, and not necessarily remove all the problems, but certainly transform how we relate to them. That is within our hands. And then, also tonight, we looked at the four goals of the Kadampas. So there you remember the importance of having stable faith in the three jewels, in particular in the Dharma, developing the mind of contentment, the mind that is content with our circumstances, a mind that is not continuously drawn towards desirable objects and relationships and the like. And then thirdly, the practice of patience, which we've already heard about. So this is what we've looked at tonight. And we need to, and this really is an essential practice that we need to incorporate into our daily meditation. And through doing so, it has the power to transform our lives. So we'll stop here for tonight. Next week we'll start at the top of page 245 with the practice of joyous perseverance. And so if you have some questions, then please do ask. But it's a little late, it's a little wet outside, so if you need to go, then please feel free to leave. So any questions? Yes, sir.
There was a talk about when you can't calm yourself, then fear arises. And it was said that fear is an affliction. Now, do we mean to say there that fear is an affliction rather than fear in general? Because there is the fear that we cultivate that is the, one of the causes of refuge, the fear of It seems awkward to say that's an affliction.
So, if we generate fear, a fear for when we're looking for the iron, we can't find the iron, we generate fear. Is that fear an affliction? Because that's in other contexts when we say fear, it is an affliction, but not always, such as we can generate fear for falling in the lower realms.
Not quite. I was just saying, Tanaka said that after that example, we said that fear is an affliction.
Yes.
But it seemed awkward just to say that in general.
Yes.
So
can I just check, is there times when fear is affliction as well as when fear is not an affliction? For example, falling into the lower realms, fearful falling into the lower realms.
Then he,
Kazinato she sena samson yomong re samson yomong mare pena nato kidding nyendo majo ki dopa suk tempo kedu kalite nyendo jona deni ngati dumel re deni di segidu dendi yomong mare
de di tonye de deni ge trakwa chena de du di gen yi chare gen
in terms of the fear that one feels when one can't find the self and thinks I don't exist. So that fear that we can call an afflicted mind, because it is on the side of faults. It's not in accordance with reality. It is a doubt. So there's an anxious mind. Do I exist or not? So it's an anxiety, an anxious mind. So therefore, this we can call as an affliction. Okay. But again, I didn't answer. I said, but it didn't come back. Okay. Yeah. I saw another hand somewhere, I think. No? Okay. Then thank you, and don't get too wet.
Yeah.